It's easy to leave a job. It's just a paycheck, and you just kind of, and that's a transactional one, right? It's a job. They pay me, and I give them whatever. And careers, they're a little bit better than a job, but lots of people leave companies in pursuit of their career, mm-hmm. and it's about their advancement mm-hmm. and some other things. When it's a calling, it's different. Let's just say you hang in there a bit longer. You endure things.
Why?
Because it's what you were built for.
This is the Made to Advance podcast. I'm your host, Brian Olick. We're here to inspire and equip you for your best future. Well, hey, everybody, it is so good to have you with us. And I want to just say something before we even get to our conversation today. If you have been encouraged by Made to Advance, I want to ask if you would rate and review us. That not only helps us get the podcast out to more people, it also helps us get great guests like the one we have today. Scott Baker is with us. He is the president and CEO of National Nail, which is based in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And he has transformed National Nail from a regional building supplier to a global manufacturer. But beyond Scott's professional role, he has a heart to make a difference in many different ways in his community. And so, Scott, I am so glad to have you on the podcast today.
Well, Brian, hey, thanks for having me here. You know, we talked a little bit before we started on what was the why behind why you did this.
Yeah.
You know, engaging and inspiring people to become the best, in my words, the best version of themselves. We need more of this. There are folks that want to be inspired.
Yeah.
And they need more faith-based folks like yourself who are reaching in there and having the courage to create platforms like this. So I'm just excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I've been looking forward to it because we share a mutual friend, Craig Boehner, who leads Sara Lee Bakery. And if there is literally one name, I mean, he's got a lot of relationships, a lot of people he's networked with in his professional history and current. And if there is one name that has come up literally more than anybody else when he has spoken about people that he loves and respects and appreciates, it has been your name. And I don't say that to oversell it in the slightest. Right. He has brought you up many different times.
Well, I appreciate that, but Craig's got to widen his network of friends. Because your name comes up when I talk to him.
So. Well, that's good to hear.
He just has two friends.
That's it. He just talks about each of us to each other.
No,
yeah.
The respect I have for Craig is mutual, so...
Well, you guys met in a really cool way, and it would be fun, you know, even though you both lead companies in your own right, how you met testifies to how you are always trying to get better and grow. I mean, you've been leading it 26 years. Is that how you've been at National?
27 this May.
27.
Yeah,
okay. So you've been doing what you've been doing for a long time. I think it would be possible for some to say, "Hey, I kind of got it by now. We've been doing it. We got it figured out." But tell me about the context in which you and Craig met.
Yeah, so there's a group, a national group called the CEO Forum. It's a Christian CEO group that was founded by a guy named Mac McQuesten. Mac was Doc Dobson's second male hire.
Oh, no kidding.
So he's Dobson's second male hire, and at the age of 60, so I'm 62, at the age of 60, Mac said, "I'm going to take this from outside of focus, and we're going to make it bigger and more national." Doc really was not interested in that at the time. Mm-hmm. So Mac steps out in faith, and his belief was... CEOs sit in seats which are lonely, and they don't have a great way to network with others and, frankly, be transparent mm-hmm. With each other. And so Mac did that, and many, many years later, I was invited by a member, as was Craig invited by a member, to join the forum. And there's a class that the forum offers called the Spiritual Leadership Institute. It's a three-year class. And for me, it was like going to seminary, and it was something at that season of life that I needed. I had local friendships. I have great male relationships locally, but I didn't really know the gospel mm-hmm. As well as I would like, and I wanted to be with people that sat in my seat. Craig felt the same way, and we happened to join that class together. And so both of us were going through personal things. Both of us were going through different things through work.
Yeah.
And so not only was the faith that we both wanted to grow and be better leaders— as disciples of Jesus brought us together, but just personal stuff that we were going through at the same time. And man, it's just so grateful that God intersected us at that season of our life. Yeah. And now we are really good friends, and now I've met you through him.
Yeah. Well, I'd be curious. You guys are both part of this sort of unique environment where you're leading companies, and I think mm-hmm. people hear things like president and CEO, and a lot of times, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, the trappings that sometimes come with the office seem pretty alluring, pretty sometimes even grandiose. When you are on those calls, my impression is that really those guys have a context where they can be real. Yeah. I'd be curious to know if you were to describe the top two or three themes that guys in your seat wrestle with, challenges they face. What kind of things would come up for guys across the years of you being part of that forum?
I had a ministry for 10 years called His Barn, and the men of the barn, regardless of title, we would have the same as us as CEOs. Family, right at the top.
In what regard?
Am I being a good husband? How am I leading my children?
Yeah.
Am I modeling Jesus for them? Even on today's call with the members today, someone's bride is just getting through breast cancer. Somebody else's son or brother had a stroke. Children struggling as we do updates. Mm-hmm. So it's how do you navigate those things at the same time that you've got very, very significant responsibilities in the workplace, and that people are looking to you to navigate through difficulty.
Yeah,
and so it's you've got all the responsibilities of being, you know, who you're supposed to be with your home life, plus the burden or the joy. I guess to me, it's more of a joy privilege of leading something very significant.
Yeah.
So is there anything? It's just trying to balance those.
So you've got on the one hand, just like anybody else, that what comes with family and relationships, which is with those kind of challenges. You've got additionally then, and this is probably speaks a little bit more to the uniqueness of your role, where you're carrying significant responsibility on the corporate side and navigating that with family challenges and needs. Anything else that comes up as a particular challenge or burden to somebody who's leading a larger organization?
Self-care is one of those. Emotional health, spiritual health. How do you as an individual just be healthy?
Yeah.
You'll see people in my seat spend an enormity amount of time focused on the work side of it. And that can be consuming from a health standpoint. Mm-hmm. Are you eating well? Are you getting enough rest? Mm-hmm. Are you too tired? You know, a phrase a friend of mine introduced me to a long time ago is bring energy home. Mm. You know, am I giving it all at the office? You know, Andy Stanley wrote a book many years ago. I see some Andy Stanley stuff on your shelves.
Yeah.
Cheating at home, right?
Right.
And what does that mean? So, and certainly the older I get, just the health side of it becomes more significant to me. But
if you were talking to a guy who was on the front end of his journey, guy or gal, who was on the front end of their journey as a present CEO or somebody who's looking to step into that seat, how would you coach them now? I mean, having had these conversations and walked the journey, when it comes to their own personal health, what would you say to do? What would you say to avoid?
Yeah, take it seriously.
Mm-hmm. Because there's probably people that are like, oh, I'm just going to go with my hair on fire towards the company side, don't worry about all the details of health and stuff. So number one is just like, no, this is actually a big deal.
It really is. And the first one is spiritual health. And so where are you with the Lord?
Mm-hmm.
You're put in so many situations in that kind of seat where you can compromise. Mm. And so it's where are you at? In spiritual health, do you have good friends? Do you have good advisors that are checking? And so, you know, I've got more than one mentor, and it's nice to have just honest check-ins with them. Where are you really at? Mm-hmm. Not where are you at, but where are you really at? So you got to check spiritual health, emotional health. You know, what's going on upstairs? You know, what are you thinking about when when you wake up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, what's the first thing in your mind? And too often for me, and this is a conversation I had with Mac probably a month ago, I said, Mac, I'm waking up at four and I'm thinking about, you know, work, you know, or I'm waking up and I'm thinking about this. You know, it's training your mind to be thinking on things of the Lord. Mm-hmm. You know, those should be the things you're thinking about. So spiritual health, emotional health. And we talk about physical health. You work out, good for you. I used to do that more between my 40s and 50s. I got cancer and I haven't been as good at it. But diet matters. Mm-hmm. Rest matters. What you put in your body matters. Because...
Yeah. Did you start feeling that more as you got older? I feel like, and I watch my teenage kids and sometimes they're just, they love candy. They love, you know, all the stuff.
Yeah.
And then, there's a sense in which they can get away with a little bit more right now. Did you find that as you got further along in your journey that the health decisions you made, you felt more?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, physically my body. So two knee surgeries, both Achilles have been ruptured, tore a labrum. Got some other stuff with my hip, a shoulder, you know, a neck. I played college sports and played competitive stuff till I was 38. So flexibility, you know, making sure you're stretching, making sure your strength matters, some of those things and diet matters. Mm-hmm. And so, making really good choices on that, as you get to enjoy, you know, your 60s and your 70s. Is a big deal. And so I'm fortunate enough that I do get to enjoy that.
Yeah.
But you're just seeing, you know, folks that, not so much.
Well, and it's tough too. I think it feels like a lot in our culture where you're doing fine. So you might feel like, oh, I don't need to do all that. But it's one of those deals that there's a delayed either payoff or there's a delayed you're going to pay as far as if the work that you put in on the front end. So it's a good word. It's funny. It's one of the themes of Made to Advance since we've had about 14 episodes live and we've recorded more than that. And so I would say that if I were to sit there and think what's one of the themes that's come up over different conversations that I've been surprised by, honestly, health has come up a fair bit.
Yeah.
People talking about the importance of health, about making the hard decisions to get discipline, say yes to the right things and say no to some other good things, but mm-hmm. things that are competing for these areas that are just easy to back burner, intimacy and time with, connecting with my wife and conversations and all these things, that can be like, oh, I've got work. And they go, no, we've got to change this.
Got to make time for it. Yeah.
So National Nail,
yep.
You hear that name and you think nails.
That's right. That's right.
It's much bigger than nails. So maybe for the sake of our listeners, and they could obviously go to you guys' website and see the full portfolio, but give us kind of the overview of what National Nail is all about.
Yeah. So, you hear nails and often it's fingernails. You get people LinkedIning me, want to know about, manicures, which I don't understand, but the company is, around 70 years old. And so we're in the building materials space. You'll largely find us in residential construction. So it could be single family, could be multifamily. You may be doing an exterior project like a deck. Mm-hmm. But we connect things. Three primary brands. One's called Camo. So if you're building an outdoor living space, a deck or something, our fasteners could help you, whether it's a treated lumber, all the way to synthetic. So we could help you out with that. Also under the substructure, we could help you out with. So any of those fasteners and tools, mm-hmm. Camo can help you out. Profit would be another one of our brands. So Profit would do the heavy lifting of the house. So you think of a concrete foundation, fasteners that would be there, and mm-hmm. then you start framing your house, and eventually you're going to finish the interior. So Profit's going to show up in a very significant way through some type of pneumatic gun collated. We're going to help you out there. And then if you need 1 pound of something or 5 pounds of something, you can go down and you can find us at most of your lumber yards here, at large retailers. You'd find us at. But that's the heavy lifting brand.
Okay.
And the third brand is one called Stinger. And, that's really going to show up on your roof. So we're going to put down an underlayment. We're going to put down your roof, mm-hmm. and then we'll do some sidewall stuff for you. So that brand is going to help keep moisture out of your home. So those are the three primary brands.
Okay.
There's some innovation in each one of the brand. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the product side of the business. But the purpose of the company is inspiring people to build better. So, which is often surprising. Really, what the heck does that even mean for a nail company? But yeah. Just like in your word, inspire, well, you know what? We try and use the platform of the company mm-hmm. To inspire people to become, if it's our employee owners, a better version of themselves. So what does that mean? Inspire our customers to build something that they couldn't do unless we were in it. How do we inspire our supplier base? And we don't have any suppliers in the States. All our suppliers are around the world. But how do we touch them a bit differently yeah. with us? And then also inspire our community. And so getting our people in the community to serve and leave the company in a pretty different place, mm-hmm. You know, because our folks had a chance to participate there. So
did that idea of inspiring people to build better, was that something that came with you as far as when you stepped into the organization? I mean, because you said 70 years old.
Yeah, 70-year-old company.
Yeah, and you've been there 26, almost 27.
Correct.
So how did things culturally, so to speak, shift as you stepped into leadership? Or was it like, no, I'm taking the baton that's already been moving in that direction and just taking it the next leg?
Yeah, I like that idea of a baton. Our U.S. men's Olympic or U.S. men's team drops it a lot in the 4x100. But I was given a really good platform by a guy, you know, Roger Bruins, another person named Tom Corhorn. And so they invited me into something mm-hmm. 27 years ago. And so I accepted the invitation, received what they gave me, and then you build from there, right? And so there's a platform that was established. And over time, as the industry changes, as you begin to change things on your own, you change the business. And so the purpose came much later.
Okay.
And so that was my current team as we create purpose. And mm-hmm. it's like, why are we really here? Why does the company exist? You know, it isn't just do nails and screws and tools, but there has to be something that's bigger than that. And so the current team, the current leadership team came up with that purpose. And what I like about it, it's similar to my personal purpose. Mm-hmm. It's how do you use your life to be an inspiration for somebody else, that if they bump into you for a moment or more than a moment, they leave a bit better. And that's what I personally wanted to see in our company.
How did that, once your team codified, that's the purpose.
Yeah.
How did that then affect operations? Because obviously you're still making stuff, you're delivering product, you're doing all the things you do as a business. How did that seep into the outworkings of the organization?
Yeah, I'll take you back a little bit to culture. You know, so when I started with the company, we had made a, you know, just blue collar, white collar. Mm-hmm. We had union, non-union. We had front office, back office, and so it was difficult, you know, to begin developing something. And so, over the first X number of years of my career, it was building an environment where people would trust me. And if you think of this of a pyramid, it's If I don't feel safe with you, I'm not going to trust you. Mm-hmm. So I had to focus on, do people feel safe? Then it was, they'll trust me. Okay, if they trust me, maybe we'll be a bit vulnerable and transparent. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. We got vulnerability and transparency in the company. And the last one, what you're really shooting for is freedom. So people will feel free to do their job mm-hmm. and be honest with you, and you can have good conversations. So we were building that inside the culture. The other one, too, is we took the company from being owned primarily by two people where it's owned by a trust, an ESOP, so everyone, it's 100% employee-owned.
And so that's a radical shift.
It is a radical shift.
And it's awesome. I was going to ask you if that was already set up that way, if that was a move you guys made, because that is a huge statement to the team.
It's a big statement in general. And so we had those things already there, and then, you know, faith was already in the business, and we just took it further mm-hmm. in the business where, you know, as I look at the business, it's how do I help folks in the work environment become better men and women, you know, husbands and wives, mm-hmm. moms and dads. And that comes from the faith side of the business that was handed to me mm-hmm. By the previous owners, and we just kept juicing that up even more. And so when we come up with inspiring people to build better, when we already had a culture of every life has meaning.
Yeah.
You know, if they're a son or a daughter of the king, and every life has meaning, and we want them to do meaningful things at work. We're already super transparent with mm-hmm. how we run the business. When we came to that reason for existing, it wasn't some big aha. It was, that's us.
Yeah, yeah.
Those five words are us.
Yeah.
And so we didn't have to make this radical transformation because it already was us. But then to your point, how do you take that and then get that embodied from something up on a wall?
Yeah.
We then had some of our leaders then go, okay, we're taking this and we're going to put it into every department, every function. Mm. And how do they live that out
yeah.
as someone who works in operations? How do you live it out in customer service? How do you live it out? And so every employee owner has been through some workshop
mm-hmm.
on what those five words mean.
And
that's work. I mean, you've got to define what the word inspire means. You have to define, just like what you're doing, there has to be consensus or agreement on what the word means.
Right.
And then you have to measure it. And so we're in a 2-year journey right now on putting that from where I sit to, you know, folks doing different jobs.
I love the intentionality there. And it's really cool. I was going to ask you if, when you guys rolled out the idea of, hey, we're here to build people better.
Right.
Did I get that? I got to make sure I get my words right. I said it right, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Inspiring people to build better. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I was going to ask you, was that greeted with any measure of skepticism or cynicism? Because sometimes when it feels like management goes off in an ivory tower and come back with this or about, but I love that really you just put words to what you're already doing.
Correct.
And so I'll say around Engedi here, oftentimes there's a document we have called the Engedi Way that we really use for staff primarily. Mm. But then sometimes somebody who's been part of the church will step onto staff and they'll get their first exposure to this document that is philosophically kind of how we work.
Yeah.
And my all-time favorite conversations with a new team member who's been part of the church, but again, the staff side of it is a new thing, is I still meet with every new staff person to walk through this and give color commentary and take questions. But my favorite response is when they go, you know, I've never heard any of this verbalized or seen it anywhere,
right.
But honestly, none of what's on this paper surprises me at all. That just feels like what the atmosphere is. And that's the best. And what a great position then. So you guys are rolling this out. They've seen all these great examples of this is your heart, this is your practice. So now it really is taking it next steps. Yeah. Some of those cultural things that aren't so much how many widgets did we sell are harder to measure. I know you said the 2-year journey. Do you already have the measurements in place? This is how we're going to tag
still putting those things together. Okay. You know, it's things like turnover. It's things like internal advancement. How many people get promoted to certain levels. There's some process stuff that we're still exposed on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we have to be able to, how do we know we're inspiring people?
Mm-hmm.
How do you measure that? Well, it's still a work in process.
Yeah.
The people we've identified, so we have a pretty good idea in that, but you're spot on. It's, if that's your purpose, you must be able to measure it. And so the measurement piece is still coming for us.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But it was good. I mean, those weren't even my words. That was one of our leaders. You know, Doug is a pretty thoughtful person. And it's like, okay, let's put these things together. And and you spend a bunch of time doing words. And, you know, and then once that was put down, we just looking at each other going, well, yeah.
That's it.
That's kind of who we're, you know, in the process of always trying to become
right
that as a company.
Knowing that team members have ownership and knowing that they're workshopping with the purpose of the company, have you seen over the last years since you first rolled that out, have you seen more ideas and thoughts about how we can do this better bubble mm-hmm. up from underneath because of a greater sense of ownership and clarity around this is what we're about?
I would tell you that things already, they kind of bubble up.
Mm-hmm.
Our workforce is changing. 60% or more of our people have been with us less than 5 years.
Wow.
You know, due to the growth, and then we're going to continue adding and more folks. And
how many people are we talking about when you say that?
We're at about 180.
Okay.
And then we're adding another, I think it's 40 this year. And then there's hiring plans that we need to go beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some of the folks who have been with us for a bit, a lot of this is new.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's new. And so they may have been at places where It wasn't encouraged. We weren't part of planning. And so some of this is new to them. We're going through a 24 to 28 planning process right now, which has taken, it's become bigger than I had anticipated going in. And we're now in the process of taking some of the larger goals and integrating them all the way to pretty much everyone in the company, being able to see themselves in it, and they'll have some type of responsibility in there. But that then becomes the communication vehicle. Having someone in whatever seat you are to be able to see themselves in a 28 plan, that's the goal for ours and for my team, is that regardless of my assignment, I can see how I'm impacting the overall company. And as an employee owner, I can see how I'm benefiting somehow, but I see myself in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really cool. It's cool. I mean, even if some of the measurements you guys end up using, I mean, some you've mentioned, and those are easier things, like retention is an easy thing to measure. But some of those softer things, I mean, we've historically as an organization had quite a few defined goals. Mm-hmm. And some of them are honestly, I look at them and I'm like, gosh, I still don't love that's what we use to measure it. Yeah. We just can't figure out a better way. And I'd rather have something that we track than nothing, because I feel like it's really easy on some of the, I think probably churches, I mean, this is, you know, Jim Collins and many others have said this too, when they've worked with businesses and churches, there are some aspects of church life and ministry that are just a little harder to measure and quantify. But, and I'm not suggesting we have to have a goal for every single thing, but I'll tell you what, they've really helped us over the years ask, are we on track? Are we, you know, like one of the questions we ask on an annual survey is, where in your, if, is there a place in your life where you've experienced significant transformation in the last 12 months? And if so, you have to either check, we have give some possibilities, and then there's a box that's other. Well, it's really good to see over now the course of 18 years, what percentage of our people are saying, I've experienced significant transformation, because that really is a significant part of what it means to be a church.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at someone who's on your staff or on my staff, and when I say staff, it'd be every employee owner, who is as a individual person doesn't want to know they matter? And you matter when you know you're being depended on. That's a big deal. Or you matter when someone notices you. We start, you know, our staff meeting. So I have a Thursday staff meeting, and the staff meetings are started with affirmations. And it's, who did you notice doing good work?
Wow.
And then the room goes around, and, you know, I write down the names. And what I'll do is I'll reach out to those folks and say, you were in my staff meeting today.
Oh, that's cool.
When we first started doing that, it was, oh, shoot, I was in Scott's staff meeting. That must be bad. Now, it's when you come up to someone. I've already done this today to four of the folks that were affirmed.
Yeah.
I was noticed.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I mean, people want to be noticed.
Yeah.
And the other thing with the affirmation, then, is you explain who affirmed them and what they did. And so what you're doing is you're encouraging that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that happens is chatter happens, because they're going, oh, I showed up in the meeting, and here's what Scott said, and the CEO noticed me, and you know the leadership team knows my name, but linking things down helps folks. Again, they're a son and daughter of the King. They have meaning beyond what they have to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same dad as I have.
Yeah.
Why would you take someone who's the son or daughter of the King and have them come work at your place and then not notice them or give them meaningless things to do?
Mm-hmm.
It and yet it happens in the workplace. I violate that. But that is our goal.
Yeah.
Is provide a place where folks can, you know, you mentioned, you know, how do you know you're better? We have a phrase called, could the person I was a year ago compete with who I am today?
Oh, that's good.
And all we're asking is, if Brian is sitting here talking to Brian, and your bride was here, could she convict you of you being a more attentive and more thoughtful and more patient and a bit more engaged husband? Mm-hmm. Yes or no? And show me the video. How about your kids? You know, does my dad know my teachers? Does my dad know what I'm afraid of? I mean, could I convict my dad of being more present now than I could a year ago? And so you're just starting all these relationships you have. And of course, the answer you want is I just spent another year on this planet. And I am taking steps towards, strides towards, the phrase we use is becoming the preferred version of who I'm intended to be in Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think even in my own life, Brian, too often you look back and go, you know what? I'm less engaged.
Mm-hmm.
I was less engaged at home. I was less engaged with, you know, with Christy. But when you're using that as the yardstick and you're not afraid to use it, you use it as a place to go, okay, you know, I need to tighten some things up here. And that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's what measuring things do for you.
Yeah. Do you find, well, I'm thinking about just your everyday, ordinary team member who's not in the some kind of management level. How do you, you're talking about affecting them as a husband or as a father.
Right.
What does that look like tangibly? I mean, is that, are you actually talking about real time with staff about things like family and fathering and things like that? Or is this more just talking about how you grow as a person and what's that looking like on the ground?
It's a very different levels. You know, with my staff, on a Thursday meeting, I'm likely going to discuss something, today with some reminders on some books I've read, that I came across again that have really impacted me, that I'm probably going to read again. It could be, I'm a big fan of Billy Graham journals. It could be something, boom, in my peace journal today, here's, boom, this touched me. You know, so that's going to happen in my staff. Some of the trainings that we do that all employee owners go through, our life training type stuff. You know, there's this thing called R factor. In essence, what it is, you know, do you really have a good idea of who you want to become? What's that outcome you're shooting for? Is there a desired life that you want, a target that you're looking for? And that applies to business and personal life. And then what happens when the circumstances of life don't go your way? What do you do? Do you go above the line and pause like Nehemiah did? Or do you go below the line and blame, complain, defend, self-pity, and victim cards? And so we teach those things.
Yeah.
And on that class in particular, it's a two-day class, the feedback we've gotten, and it's helped me more at home than it has at work.
Wow.
You know, we offer Dave Ramsey. We, so much of the teachings we do, we teach financial stewardship in the business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we apply that to home.
Mm-hmm.
The budgets are different.
Yeah.
New employee orientation will be next week. We have 11 new employee owners. I tend to teach 4 hours of that week. And so it's important to me that every employee owner meets me and I know their name.
Yeah.
And then that trickles down to my staff. And it's a big deal when you walk up, you know, I know everybody in the building.
Well, I love the idea that you guys are really, you're catalyzing important conversations with the team that they may not be used to having, and some probably more than others, but that you're catalyzing important conversations that have these cross applications that go way beyond work stuff, and they can apply to work. But I love that you're using that as a context to just be able to talk about deeper things. Does anybody resist talking about those things at work ever? Do they feel like, oh, man, I just wanted a paycheck, and now I gotta, you know, ask all these deep questions? Or is it pretty much embraced across the board because people are like, oh, this is great?
Oh, I mean, we describe, sure. You know, when we're selecting people, we don't hire people, we select them.
Mm.
Okay, that comes back from being an athlete. I'd rather be selected to shoot the free throw and take the last shot than you know, hired, right? We encourage people to do their due diligence. Make sure you know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to do the same. Because putting someone on a team, if it's an offensive player, they better fit your offensive scheme.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then both of you made a bad call.
Right.
So you really want to ensure that people know the culture of what they're doing, the responsibilities they have. So we do that. So they have some sense for what the culture is going to be like at our company,
right.
But nothing's mandated. Nothing's mandated at all. But they just know that we're going to do our darndest to follow 8 character traits.
Mm-hmm.
We have 4 cornerstones that matter to us. We're going to develop people. There has to be a willingness on both sides. Mm-hmm. I can be willing to develop you.
Yeah.
But if you're not willing to invest in yourself, well, then you're probably not gonna grow. But no, we don't mandate anything. But culturally, there's a rhythm to how we treat people.
Yeah.
How we communicate in the company. That, you know, I think most people would say it's a little bit more refreshing
mm-hmm.
than where I came from.
Yeah, that's I think just knowing that your leadership team cares more about you than just what you produce or what you can do for the company, but there's a whole person kind of a care. Who doesn't want that? How do you navigate matters of faith? It seems like, and just looking a little bit at National Nail, it feels like you guys are pretty transparent. You can you smell the kind of like the faith vibes, but obviously you want to be sensitive to people mm-hmm. and all those kinds of things. So how, thinking of leaders who are in companies where they go, well, we're not so explicit as a culture, and maybe they're not in the seat that you are where they can set expectations in a different way.
Yeah.
What would you say to that person?
I would just encourage them to be who they are. I think it'd be tough. Folks need to know who you are. That's my belief in mm-hmm. what makes you tick. It would be a shame if you profess to be a disciple and whatever your network was, and people didn't have a clue that's who you were at work.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a shame.
In some ways, inauthentic.
Yeah, it would be a shame. In Matthew, he commissions us to do what? You know, all nations under the earth. He doesn't say, oh, except at work.
Yeah.
Oh, except on your sports team. Oh, except with your buddies. No, and it's everywhere. And that includes the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that at some places, at some work, it may be frowned on to pray or to do something else, but it doesn't mean that you can't be a person who elicits grace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we lead with the long arm of grace. It doesn't mean that you can't be generous, you know, in a way that's different with your thoughts,
mm-hmm.
with your words, with your touch. You know, with how you demonstrate things. There's a number of things that you can do, even though the workplace may really not want you, being overt
right.
that you are a follower of Jesus Christ. And so at our place, we're fortunate. And we're not Bible bashing. We're not trying to convert people.
Yeah.
It's just, this is... I think the best business book ever written is the Bible. It gives you the guardrails, and there's a lot of room within those guardrails mm-hmm. in which you can navigate. And I think the other thing it does for me is it helps me understand when I've crossed the guardrail.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why did I say that mm-hmm. that way? Why did I treat this person that way? Why did that catch my attention? But it helps bring you back.
Mm-hmm.
To go, this is the way I'm supposed to live. I would just encourage them to not leave Jesus on Sunday at church. Bring him home to your house. Don't leave him in your car.
Yeah.
Bring him into the workplace. And just be authentic.
If I was eavesdropping on conversations that were happening around National Nail, and particularly I'm thinking of where believers are present, would they potentially reference like a Bible verse if they were, would that come up ever?
It's very possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would happen, or the way we treated someone or something we did to raise money for somebody, or man, Scott brought us all together and we prayed spontaneously during the day for, you know, a person mm-hmm. or a situation with work and, yeah, absolutely. That's going to happen, and I think for the most part, you know, whether people agree with or share your beliefs. They do find it refreshing that we care for people and want for people, maybe differently than another workplace that they came from.
Yeah, it's funny, and I try to tell this to people all the time, and you just hope that they they're willing to take a risk and trust one person's opinion. But of all of my years of ministry, whenever I've asked if I can pray for somebody, even the person that comes off as perhaps the most hostile or skeptical towards faith, people are glad to be prayed for. I mean, even if it's in their mind just sort of a Hail Mary or they're not sure, but there is something, and I, of course, from my vantage point, it's still very spiritual and supernatural, regardless of what they are thinking about it. But I think they do feel that prayer in a real way, and they feel the spiritual side of what's happening, even if they might themselves consciously go, I don't know if I buy it, all of it, but it means a lot to people. You've had an incredible longevity as a leader, I don't know what exactly the stats are, but I do know that when it comes to folks who are CEOs of companies, it's pretty oftentimes a pretty short stint. How do you, being in it for as long as you have in your same role, and how do you stay fresh? How do you stay excited? How do you get up? And how often is it that you go, you know what? I just don't feel that excited. I mean, if we're going to be honest, because there is, I'm guessing you might be another level of leader than me, but there probably are some days where you're like, work is just work today, and I'm going to get in there. But yeah, so to help me understand maybe how does the whole passion equation work when you've been doing what you've been doing for as long as you have?
Well, first, I mean, I don't think anyone's wanted me, so this is the only place I could keep a job for this long. So, there are jobs, there are careers, and there are callings. It's easy to leave a job because it's just a paycheck, and you just kind of, and that's a transactional one, right? It's a job. They pay me, and I give them whatever. And careers, they're a little bit better than a job, but lots of people leave companies in pursuit of their career, and it's about their advancement and some other things. When it's a calling, it's different. Let's just say you hang in there a bit longer. You endure things.
Why?
Because it's what you were built for. So probably at 39, 40 for me is just when things started to change a little bit. And so it became clear to me that the reason I was where I'm at was to build men and women on my watch in a workplace, which is very different than where I came from. It was to create transformative wealth through an ESOP for folks that otherwise at a different employer would not have that opportunity. And so you just start playing with words. It's like transformative wealth, okay, through the ESOP. And it's been a blast watching, you know, folks. We've created 35 millionaires in the last 13 years, 12 years. And that's just super, super cool.
Yeah, you know? Particularly relative to the size of your staff.
I know. I mean, my goodness. It's super, super cool. Yeah. And you get folks who never thought they'd have that kind of wealth. But the other thing, too, that we teach and is you and I both know folks who have money, but they don't have wealth. And what I mean by that is wealth is if you've been blessed to be married, it's having a spouse that loves you. Mm-hmm. Having kids that want to spend time with you when they have other options. It's parents that are alive that you want to spend time with. It's rich friendships. And we've seen people leave after whatever career and all their friends were work friends. And then they find out they really weren't real friends, but have really rich friendships. Yeah. Can name six people right now that'll carry their casket. Yeah. You know? Have health that they can do something with. And so we teach and try and create transformative wealth when our people get to a certain season of life, they're okay. Mm-hmm. But we also share that no, this is more important. You know, that's more important than, of course, the one that trumps all of them is you know, have you accepted Jesus as your Lord and Savior? And it would be disappointing if we just focused on the money side of it and not the eternal life side of it. Mm-hmm. And there's all these other things. And so you will endure things when it's a calling.
Yeah.
You know, you'll endure difficulty. That maybe if I was just chasing a career, I would have left a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, when your calling is so close to how God has fashioned you and wired you, you come alive when you're operating in calling. I mean, it really, when people think about what they can do and give almost energy to it almost unceasingly, it's when you're operating in calling, it really, I mean, it's so close to who you are that that's life-giving. I think what you and I both have a privilege of, and I think you can do this at any job, but the closer you can have your calling and what you do for a living overlap, the better.
Now I
say that, and sometimes people think, yeah, but there's no way I could look at my job like that. I just am a barista at a coffee store. And I'll tell you what, one of my favorite jobs I've ever had was when I was in a barista during seminary. I worked at a Starbucks and then a Barnes & Noble cafe. And that passion I had to build into people didn't change just because I was making minimum wage serving coffee. I was having some of the best conversations in this cafe, and in some ways, conversations I don't get to have now as a pastor. So I think calling can transcend almost the paycheck. Would you agree with that?
It does, but back to your other question about energy. But there, you still have fatigue.
Mm-hmm.
You still get burned out. You still get tired.
Yeah.
You still get frustrated. You still.
Mm-hmm.
So those emotions and those feelings are still there.
Yeah.
It's that your joy in doing some other things and this feeling you get by serving other people and watching them grow and seeing the impact their lives are having, and then your own growth because you're just continuing to invest in yourself and learn and challenge yourself to lead well, you still have those other things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, okay, how do you manage those? And how do you deal with them? Because it's still there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
one of the things that when I was talking to Craig about that we were finally going to have this conversation, he said, you have to ask Scott about the barn ministry.
Oh.
So, you know, I know this much about it, but help me understand, what is the barn ministry?
Yeah, so my late 30s, around 40, my wife and I had moved to a property that had a 40 by 60 barn on it. I was engaged with men's ministry at the time, and so we had 6 acres, and it was a neat property. And so 8 of us, we're exploring what it meant to be a disciple. 6 different churches, 8 guys. And none of us felt that we were being discipled at church. So we began studying what discipleship meant. And I can see our first time. It was a January 8th ballpark, unheated barn. We got these other heaters around us, and you know, we've got gloves on and hats on. And so 8 knuckleheads are exploring that. And so it started with 7 of my friends. And then that summer, we held a revival in our pasture. And 90 folks trusted us enough. 90 men showed up.
Yeah.
The praise and worship band was not good. But 90 people showed up. And I remember in the back with a friend of mine, Brian Molitor, he goes, this is the beginning of something.
Hmm.
And so for the next 9 years, we would do a revival in the pasture. And it grew to 400 or 500 men that would show up in August. Really good praise and worship band, and then just the messages that we would send were outstanding. And then that led to, I mean, we were doing Wednesday night stuff. We launched a single dad's ministry there. A lot of our men would go out and then lead other ministries at their churches. We ended up on podcasts like this. Man Church was once a month on Sunday nights, and that was kind of a different kind of church. Mm-hmm. Where men felt safer than they did in a regular church. boy, one of our guys was doing TV shows. We had sort of something called TV for Dads. So we got to be on TV shows. But I don't know how many thousands of men came through the barn. But it was a big surprise. My leadership at work took off during my 40s.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Because of his barn. And that the at the kind of the tail end of it, at 50, I was diagnosed with cancer. And I think a lot of the preparation just through the barn was to get me ready for cancer. Because, you know, if you're going to have something that you really don't want, you know, you're not going to willingly sign up for something. Mm-hmm. Having a good understanding of who Jesus is in that relationship, and then with your family and your bride, and then with rich friendships, you want to be popped at that time.
Yeah.
And so it was a really good time for me to have cancer. And then that just, boom, took off even more in terms of what I learned about myself and God and those other relationships through cancer.
Yeah. How did it change how you thought about yourself or leadership? How did you come out different?
Well, one of the things I remember writing, so I had kidney cancer, and I remember writing on the, I journal a bunch, and I wrote down, kidney cancer was uninvited. God had that one. He sent me a kidney stone. That's how I found I had it. Mm. I said, this didn't break his heart. And then I wrote, it's the invited cancers that have invited in my soul that he cries over and breaks his heart. And I wrote, down words like anger, regret, unforgiveness. Mm-hmm. I wrote down those kinds of words. And I started identifying those as invited cancers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then that led to a whole, you know, thing. I mean, these are the ones that are killing me. Not physically, but they're robbing me of the life that he has, this preferred version of me he has. Yeah. And I'm choosing this other stuff that I'm hanging on to. And that just launched into some other things that we then did with the ministry. And so I just looked at stuff that was getting in the way, you know, for maybe for me or for our company, mm-hmm. Or for men going, dude, I mean, you're just you're terminal.
Yeah.
What a shame.
Yeah.
What a shame. You're just holding on to a, you know, a hurt from whatever, and it's killing you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, some of the teachings just took off from there, and just looking at it differently, and some models we now use that came from laying on a couch and just journaling. So
my wife went through breast cancer, and she here it is. The church is at the time absolutely exploding, and we're growing like crazy. We're adding a service. We're all this is going on, and meanwhile we're doing chemo and radiation and the like. Surgeries, all that. And she would still say to this day, it's one of the richest times and experiences had with Jesus in her life. She just grew like crazy. I remember her saying when the treatment part was done, she said, there's a little part of me that's sad right now because I just was close to the Lord in a way that it's just special when you're in that tough of a place. Yeah. I love what you're saying though about, you know, even looking at cancer metaphorically. And it's funny because we think of, cancer is your physical health. And then these other cancers you're talking about are, say, spiritual, emotional, relational health.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, of course, it's all woven together.
It is. They're all taking life from your soul.
Yeah.
And remember, one of the things I wrote down was don't cheat pain. Mm. Okay. You're an athlete. You lift. You know, at one time when I was younger, you know, I was an athlete. And as athletes, it's the next rep.
Mm-hmm.
It's heavier weight. It's the next mailbox. It's whatever. And you sweat. And we know that the pain that we endure, that we go through, the suffering, we know that perseverance has a gift at the other side of it.
Yeah.
And we willingly sign up for that stuff. Paul talks about that in Romans. It became one of my go-to scriptures, Romans 5:4. James hits you right out of the gates. Hey, by the way, guys, just so you know, in this life, you will face trial and it's going to suck.
Yeah.
But we don't want to do that emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just wrote, just do not cheat the experience I'm going to go through because the value is on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And if I cheat it, then I'm going to miss out on a gift.
Yeah.
And I'm going to miss out on growing. And so what happens when you have these unplanned, you know, these circumstances of life we don't want, but when you treat it as not, I'm going to like get through it. It's what will God teach me in this place mm-hmm. that I can only learn here about him and about myself? And then how am I supposed to use this? And the more that you just train yourself, you know, when COVID pops, okay, let's go do COVID. I've been through COVID, but I've been through some pretty tough stuff.
Yeah.
You know, or a mortgage thing hits you. Okay, I haven't been through this one before, but I've been through some pretty tough stuff.
Yeah.
And so I have some idea on how to go, how to navigate
right.
some difficulty.
Right.
It's just building a different kind of muscle.
Yeah. That, it's funny you just said building a different kind of muscle, because I, literally as you were saying that, I thought to myself, this is all just such muscle rep work. And the time you want to start training is not when COVID hits, or when is not when, if when you've got the reps in ahead of time, then you're prepared. Yeah. And I just, you know, I hope anybody's listening right now is thinking not, I'm going to wait for the big thing to come, and then I'm going to start trying to do the internal work. Because if you start doing it in advance, then you can really walk through it in a whole different way. Now, thankfully, God is gracious, and he meets us in all kinds of...
Well, and difficulty has a way of inviting itself to your door regardless. And in our industry, it's it's a joke, but it's not a joke, is the best time to repair the roof is when it's not raining.
Yeah.
And so to your point, there's a lot of stuff that we should be working on well in advance of whatever that trial is going to be.
Yeah.
So
that's good. Any thought you have when it comes to thinking about legacy?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of for this? This is what a successful legacy for my life will have looked like.
Oh boy! You think of the book that's being written about your life right now, and by mine. And I think to me the best books are the ones where someone takes a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper, and they write about the impact that you've had in their life. And it isn't just one thing. It isn't legacy's the company. Okay, that's interesting. But it's really the people you've allowed God to use you mm-hmm. as a vessel to impact them. And, your spouse, your children, your kids, or I guess, your parents. But how about the people on this podcast? I mean, how many people are putting up writing down right now because Brian acted on a nudge that they've made a move? Because you moved, and you'll never meet them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for me, it's at inspiring people to build better. How is my life being used in some way that someone would say, I bumped into Brian for a moment, and there's something different in me because there was something different in him. Or maybe I hung out with you for a week or a month or 6 months. So for me, it's just I got to meet Scott. And I'm a bit better because I met him.
Yeah.
So, and clearly that's more important with my family. But yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
That would be the thing.
I love that. It's, we have all kinds of different goals and things we hope for in life and out of our job and all these things. But it is just so good for any of us to be clear on what really does matter most is the investment you made in people. I had a friend that would love, sometimes almost to a fault, love talking about what are they going to say when you're in the ground and you know that question. But that is a good question to ask because it's just so clarifying in that moment how many of the things maybe that we think about a lot or set our sights on, they're not necessarily bad things. They just don't matter that much. Mm-hmm. And what really matters is somebody that can say, I remember this conversation I had with Scott, or I remember when he reached out in that way. I think, though, your point is really a good one on even thinking of the podcast. there is a lot of impact that we're going to make that we aren't going to know about. And I think that's a good point, because it means, hey, I'm going to live my life in such a way that I am seeking to be the kind of person that leaves that kind of deposit, knowing that I will frequently, at least this side of eternity, not know the difference that deposit made.
Sure.
And because if you're always looking for, like, I got to hear the story or I got to have the reaction, I think, I just think that we're just not going to always hear it. And that's where I think faith really does come in, where I'm planting seeds. And after that, I say, all right, God, it's on you to do what you want.
Keep throwing.
Yep.
Keep throwing.
Yeah.
The seed's the constant, but the farmer's got to keep throwing, right?
Yeah.
Got to keep throwing.
Well, thanks so much for being willing to hang out here at Made to Advance. And I see why, after all these months of Craig saying, you got to talk to Scott, I can see why. I'm sure grateful for the friend that you've been to him through a lot of different journeys with business and with health and whatnot. And I can see why you've been such an encouragement to him. So thanks. And it's really, really cool. I hope that the story you've told today and the examples you've given of how you lead National Nail is really an inspiration to a lot of our leaders who are listening, because we all can do, even if we don't have the same exact mission as the way you said it, we can all lead our own lives and lead our companies in such a way that they build up people around us. And that's what you've given us inspiration to do. So thank you.
Well, thanks for having me, Brian. And just I'll just encourage you, keep this thing going, because you just don't know. What's the one thing that someone may have taken from today that they'll act on?
Mm-hmm.
You simply do not know. And so keep doing what you're doing. Keep showing up. You know, keep believing that, you know, the Lord's going to bless this, because he will. And again, just what a privilege to spend some time with you today. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Well, it was so much fun spending time with Scott today. And I just was so encouraged and challenged by his consistent emphasis on what does it mean to make a deposit in other people's lives. Some of the coolest people I know, honestly, are going into every meeting that they have asking, how do I leave this person with something more than they came in with? And I've been on the receiving side of that many, many times, and I sure want to be the person who is doing the same kind of thing in other people's lives. So I hope that was a challenge to you. I hope it was an encouragement to you. And I just want to say again, if you haven't yet rated our show or reviewed it, please do that. That helps us so very much. This has been a production of Engedi Church. We've got more awesome conversations and incredible guests to come. So until next time, know you were made to advance.